Hari Krishna.
According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the Lord says, I am intensely pleased with bhakti, which arises from my mercy. See my astonishing skill. With the desire that the progeny you create would be victorious, you praise me by saying that I had a form with an ocean of wondrous qualities, and also describe that I was devoid of material qualities like sattva guna. I am pleased with that. Let there be auspiciousness even for those who praise me for having qualities like sattva guna in the form of Narayana. But I am not pleased with those who say I have not qualities. Let there be no auspiciousness for them.
Right.
So here he's saying that he has unlimited qualities because it's all those qualities that make up the material creation. But he himself has no material qualities. Right, so that's a very unique position and how you can have be the source of all qualities but have no material qualities. Right? And then, from that, so even those who think he's in the mode of goodness, right? So those who worship Vishnu and are worshiping as the incarnation of the mode of goodness, they'll get auspiciousness. Because they're worshiping, though their devotion is there, it generally tends to be this bhakti mr. karma. Right? So it's actually they're performing karma, but they're using bhakti to do it, right? So then in performance of that, they want all kinds of material benefits or even liberation. But in any case, the point that they're doing is it's about worshiping the Lord, and they say he has qualities, at least the mode of goodness here. So it will be auspicious for them, right? So those who do the Satyanarayan puja and everything like that. I don't know if you've ever seen pictures. Sometimes you see pictures. You have four of them, Narayan sitting, standing there like that, like a deity, and in front of them there's a nice pot, and there's a priest and some yajamans there, and it's all going very nicely. Everyone's smiling. So that's Satyanarayan puja. So they're worshiping the Lord as Satyanarayan, as the incarnation of the mode of goodness. But they don't understand that he's actually pure goodness. He's beyond. He's transcendental. But they don't say he has no qualities. Right? That he's formless and has no qualities. For them, he says, there let there be no auspiciousness. So that means for the Mayavadi, there is nothing auspicious about their worship.
Auspicious is a quality, so that...
Yes, well, auspicious is a quality, so they don't deserve any qualities. Right, yes.
So those who worship Panchopasana, they also get benefit.
Yes, it'll be auspicious. Though they don't get bhakti, but they'll get it'll be auspicious. But here he's intensely pleased with bhakti, which comes from his mercy. So by his mercy, then Brahma has this bhakti has arisen within his heart, and now he can see these contradictory qualities. Because one says he has no qualities, the other says he's in the mode of goodness. But here, bhakti is saying he's the source of all qualities. He has unlimited, but there's no material qualities. So that's different for both of them. So it means he has the qualities, but they're spiritual. And he has no qualities, that means no material. So it's what the other two are saying, but the opposite. But at least if you say he has qualities, that means he's a person, that's better than you saying he has no qualities. So those who say he's not a person, then they don't get any benefit. There. Lastly, the Lord offers a benediction. Any human being who prays like Brahma and who thus worships me shall very soon be blessed with the fulfillment of all his desires, for I am the Lord of all benediction. 40. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, the prayers offered by Brahma cannot be chanted by anyone who desires to fulfill his own sense gratification. Such prayers can be selected only by a person who wants to satisfy the Lord in his service, right? Because that's what Brahma's prayers are for. The prayers of the demigods, now that's to fulfill their desires, right? But the prayers of Brahma, that is prayers to perform his service nicely and not become distracted by the different material qualities and things that may come up by the performance of the service. Right? The Lord certainly fulfills all desires in regard to transcendental loving service, but he cannot fulfill the whims of non-devotees, even when such casual devotees offer him the best of prayers. You catch that sound? So Prabhupada, so... Yeah, you understand? So here, the casual devotees are still counted as non-devotees. Right, so those who are worshiping him as the incarnation, the mode of goodness, they only casually worship. They worship now and again. Right, when there's a festival, they worship or this or that. It's not like it's continuous worship. It's not that they're specifically devotees. It's just when it's that time of year to do worship Vishnu, they worship Vishnu. But when it's time for Ganesh, they worship Ganesh, Shiva. You know, they just do the whole thing. Right, so that's casual devotees. It's just occasionally they do. Right, so they're still counted as non-devotees, but they're still better than Mayavadis.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right, because these are the guys that, you know, open the hospitals, given charity, and everything that Krishna talks about.
Yes.
Mayavadis are below that. Right, that's okay. It's better than being, let's say, a gross materialist, but not, you know, that doesn't even know about God. At least there's a concept of spirit. So in that way, it's better, but it's not really very well done. Right. Okay, so those who are praying for service, then these prayers of Brahma have a meaning. Those who are not, they just want some benediction, then these are the wrong prayers. The Lord continues, it is the opinion of expert transcendentalists that the ultimate goal of performing all traditional good works, penances, sacrifices, charities, mystic activities, trances, etc., is to invoke my satisfaction. 41. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, the Lord says, there is nothing better than pleasing me. Whatever results are achieved by pious acts, austerity, sacrifice, charity, or concentration in yoga, are not results at all without pleasing me. The knowers of truth perform these pious acts to please me. They desire to please me. They do not desire to make me the object of their pleasure. I am pleased with such persons who perform bhakti with satvaguna. Footnote 16. I give them liberation. 16. Those with karma misra bhakti achieve shalokya, sarupi, etc. without direct service. Those with jnana misra bhakti achieve shantaras.
What's the difference? The place where they go is the same.
Yeah, it doesn't. Is it? Okay, I'm just saying it doesn't. He doesn't make the distinction because Salokya Sarupya means Vaikuntha. And Jnana, maybe they achieve Dasya. And while the Jnanas achieve Shanta. That could be the only. Because Salokya and now they're on the same planet. So the definitely means. You only have two options, Shanta or Dasya. So there's nothing else open. So if the Dasya, I mean, Shanta's already taken, that means Dasya. Okay, so he's saying is that, so working to please the Lord, that's what gives results in anything. This is something that's being revealed through here, is that there is no work in the world that doesn't give us result because of bhakti. We tend to think, okay, we're doing bhakti yoga, and then there's what everybody else is doing. Right? And then we're talking about, okay, the successful people, let's study them, how can we be successful? you know, they have a different system. But as is being pointed out here by Krishna, as being pointed out by Maitreya, been pointed out by the Acharyas, there is only bhakti. So anybody who's successful in the material world in anything is because of the application of bhakti. But they only apply it temporarily. Once they get what they're looking for, they give up that bhakti and then try to enjoy the results. Right? Yes. Now, we're used to bhakti being applied simply on the platform of Bhagavan, because that's the proper application, that's the full application. But you can apply it on the platform of Paramatma and Brahman. So if someone has dedicated themselves to a particular skill, person gets up every morning, does their running, comes, does their training, does whatever it is they're doing, or goes to work, applies themselves there, really focuses on it, understands the laws, the techniques, right? Because people who are successful in economics, is it chance? No, they know economics, they know the science. People who are successful in art, is it chance? No, they know the science. Politics, they know the science. Education, they know the science. So that means they're dedicating themselves to that science. That science is Krishna, as Brahman.
Yes. Do we have some who are successful because they know it as an art?
You get some hit and miss things, but if you want consistency, it has to be a science. Because if it's just an art, if you don't know the science, all you're doing is creating variety. You're looking at the situation, you're catching something. It's there. So there'll be something left over from karma. Yes, you'll get something. But the one who knows the science, they're the big ones.
Yes.
You know, like we said, you take a canvas, you paint something weird on it, it sells for millions of dollars. Why? Because Picasso did it.
Yeah.
You take some other guy in his garage, he puts down a canvas, he throws paint, he rolls over, he lets his dog walk across it, you know, eats his lunch there, and it doesn't sell. Right? He has to give it away to, you know, get it be that's the only way it'll be seen. Why? Because he's applying so-called art, but it's not based on a science. So therefore, it's not getting anything. So it's the science that makes it work. So it looks weird, but there's a science behind it. You know, that's why that eye is bigger than the other one. If you did the other eye, it wouldn't work. It's against the science.
So if we had an audience that was also degraded, they wouldn't be able to tell the difference between
And they're not going to pay $1 million for it either. You know, they'll just walk by, you know.
But it might make it onto TV.
Might.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it'll be one show and then gone. You know, just as interest sake.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, they'll see the facts and figures, but nobody will actually understand what's going on. So in other words, what's being pointed out is it's God's world. He's pervading it as time. He's in everything by all his qualities, right? Expanded through his energies. So the Brahman is pervading everything. This material world is produced from Brahman, right? The example is given, if you have a field, you plant the seeds, they grow from the field. The field remains the same. So Brahman does not transform, but this material world is growing from Brahman. Brahman is all the qualities, like the field. And then this world is growing from that. I take it we're getting into the blank look discussions. Okay.
This is Shakti Paramahama.
Yes, this is Shakti Paramahama. Like that. Because otherwise, the problem is Brahman itself can't change. Because they say it's all one. So then, if there is illusion, there is the jiva, that means Brahman has to change to do that. But then that goes against the philosophy, he doesn't change. So that's Brahma Parinamavad, so that's bogus. So Brahman actually is energies of the Lord. Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna's qualities. But they're impersonal qualities because they're just generic. Greatness, beauty, fame. They're not specific, so that's impersonal. So everything is Krishna. Right? So that means then they're all the laws that are there of the science of the tattva is how it works. Now, if we follow the laws, we get results. We don't follow the laws, we don't get results. So anybody who's getting results in this world is because they're following the laws of nature. That's all. It's not some other trick. So in the Vedic culture, they know the science, so they're directly dealing with the Lord, either in as karma misra bhakti, or as bhakti misra karma, or even jnana misra karma. I mean, bhakti misra jnana. Right? Is that their goal is karma or jnana, or their goal is bhakti, but it's mixed with karma and jnana. Right? And so then that itself means that the whole world, any living entity, is getting success because of following Krishna's laws. There is no such thing as anybody separate from that. If we think, oh, we're doing this, and then there's the karmis, that itself is illusion. Because we think, oh, the karmis are successful without bhakti. No, they're not. No one's successful without following God's laws. Just that in illusion, they don't know it. That's the advantage of the Vedic culture, is that they know the science, know it's coming from the Supreme. So all the bona fide Vedic sciences, even though they're bogus, they're bona fide bogus philosophies, they all accept that there's a Supreme. Now, how much they care about the Supreme, that's another thing. But they all accept there's a Supreme. There's no atheistic Vedic philosophy. Mayavad technically is Buddhism, so it's not Vedic. It just uses Vedic sources to prove itself, that's all. Right? Impersonalism means it's Vedic, but it's worship of Brahman. But they don't have a problem that there's a person. The four Kumaras don't say Vishnu doesn't exist, like the Mayavadis do. They even go to see him. You know, spend time, because he's, of all the Brahman that's around, he's the best. Right? But then, from that, they see that there's realization beyond the Brahman platform. Then when they see that there's Bhagavan realization, they take up bhakti. Right?
Deliberate bhakti. Deliberate bhakti.
Yeah. It means actually pure devotional service, as opposed to this mixed or the, you know, like that.
So you can...
Does that make sense? So when we're saying non-devotees, means they're not attempting for pure devotional service. And devotees, we mean those who are trying to attain pure devotional service. Now, of those, there are those who are situated in pure and those who are situated in mixed. Like that. And within pure, then there's, you know, advanced, more advanced, and, you know, really advanced. Yes.
So you can have bhakti to the energies of the Lord?
You can have bhakti to the energies, but the point is, it's still the Lord. If I know that I go out and, let's say, I run at a certain speed, I hold my funny little stick, or actually a very big stick, at a particular angle, at a particular point I stick it into the ground, and I kick my legs and do so many things with my body, I go that half inch higher and I win the gold medal. But where does that come from? There's laws, all those things, what you can do. You can't bend your knees the wrong way. So who's made all these rules? That's Krishna. So they're devoted to that. You see, so that's all they do. 10, 12 hours a day, they just train, think, do all the things like that. So that's bhakti, but it's misdirected because it's only at his energies for some material benefit.
Right.
So we don't call it bhakti as such. But in this, what we're dealing with, why we're bringing this up, is because Brahma had made the point, is how can I be creating the material world and not forget you? And Krishna makes the point, it's all me anyway. So what's to forget? Right? But even though but Brahma then makes the point, he is everything, at the same time he's not. He is everything as his energies. But he, as the Shaktiman, is beyond his energies. Therefore, he's independent and free as a personality. So when you can accept that he is everything, and that's everything goes on because of him, at the same time, he's a person who's separate from that and has his own will, then you actually understand. So that's why he said this. You know, that's what Krishna's point is. You praise me by saying I had a form with an ocean of wondrous qualities, and also described that I was devoid of material qualities. So everything is coming from him. So that's the specialness. But it's not the main position we take, because we're interested in bhakti to the form of the Lord, right? So the Bhagavan realization. But the point is, Bhagavan includes the other two, so there's no problem in Krishna being involved everywhere. Because wherever you start, if you realize it's the person, then you start from that Parabrahman platform, but it's the person who is extended as Parabrahman. So we'll, as devotees, we'll always go back to the person. These other non-devotees, they won't. They'll only get up to the Brahman or Paramatma platform and stop. And then only be focused as long as they haven't gotten their result. Once they get the result, then they're not worried. Does that make sense? The yogi meditates upon on the super soul, but as soon as he comes to the platform of samadhi and merges with the Lord, he doesn't worry about the Lord anymore. Right? He's given that up. Or he switches to bhakti. Right? And the person on the Brahman platform, everything's Brahman. So there's not a... Does that make sense? So they just sit on that. They never go beyond. These are the big ones. The ordinary ones, they just worship because they have a problem they want to go away, something nice they want to happen. You know, that's all. They're just looking for auspicious results. So they only worship as long as that auspicious result has not come. Once it comes, they stop. Does this make sense? So therefore, we don't count those others actually as bhakti, because bhakti means, by Rupa Goswami, that you're conscious of Krishna, the person that's favorable to him, that's free from karma and jnana. Right? Now it's conscious of him, favorable to him, that with Krishna, karma and jnana, that's mixed devotional service. But your goal has to be pure devotional service. Right? But when you're not conscious of him as a person, or you may accept him as a person, but as a manifestation of the mode of goodness, then we don't really count this in bhakti at all. But it's still the principle of bhakti that makes everything else work. Right? The man's devoted to his job, he's devoted to his company, he's devoted to his name. And that's why it works. What's he devoted to? He's devoted to a particular quality. That he wants to make profit. Profit's Krishna. So he's devoted to Krishna, but only his profit. Not as a person. So it's impersonal. You know, to his nation, he wants, you know, peace, prosperity, equality, all these different things. So then the whole thing comes out as it's only qualities of Krishna.
Friends.
Hmm?
And friends.
And friends.
To get to him.
Yeah, there's friends. And then there's everything else.
Yes.
Because you always give the highest example.
So when we say the universe runs on sacrifice, it's a similar point we're bringing up.
Yes, everybody is sacrificing.
And that's devotion, sacrifice devotion.
If you want any result, there has to be sacrifice. Just like you want profit from the field, you have to make an endeavor. You have seeds, you have to take those seeds, put them in the ground. I don't have those seeds, they're in the ground now. I have to make an investment, and then I'll get more back. Right? But because Krishna is unlimited, ever expanding, then if you deal with his energies properly, you always get back more than whatever was invested. Because he's always expanding, so why wouldn't profits expand? But it's only in connection with him it keeps expanding. So the Vedic culture, it keeps expanding. The modern, it goes up and down. Because it's just by the modes. You make profit today because the modes allow. You don't make profit tomorrow because it doesn't. But it's not in connection with the Lord, so it's not stable. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, I forget, maybe you remember the reference, where Radharani is saying how as soon as you analyze love, it disappears. What is that reference? As soon as you try to...
That I'm not sure. Okay. You can maybe ask Shiva Maharaj.
What I'm... getting at is that we have in this world we have this kind of duality between art and science.
Yes.
So I know that quote is Shiva Ravi, a good quote, a good source.
Yeah.
When you read that quote, it almost sounds like art in her way she's expressing is higher than science. Is that like bhakti being higher than jnana?
Yes. Yes. The point is whatever's higher on that side is lower on this side. See, is now from there they have love. Mm-hmm. They express that love to please Krishna. Right? So what is being performed is, you know, that's the art of connecting their affection to Krishna's desire. Right? Now, the documentation of that, what they're doing, that's called science. Right? See, is what you have, what I would think is what's being talked about here is in the levels of gaining knowledge. So you have aparoksha. So you have part of that means no, paroksha, aparoksha. It's below that. Below, it's prakrita. Means it's just the senses. The senses contacting the sense objects, like the animals, like the scientists. You know, basically you can take the animals and the quantum physicists and put them in the same, they have the same consciousness. Like that. Different amount of legs, but basically same consciousness. Because if they can't see it with their senses, it doesn't exist.
That's what one scientist said to me. All we have is sense data. That's all we have.
Yes, and that's all they do.
That's
have.
All they do. Have, yeah.
It's just that, and that's what the animals have. So yeah, then, what's the big deal?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they should have a few cows on their committee. You know, like, so, what do you think? Is it, you know, is it string or, you know, or particle? Mm. It's nothing. So. Then paroksha means what you hear from others. Then aparoksha means what is perceived by experiencing. But as long as you're experiencing, then it's there. But as soon as you analyze, it's not. That's I think the point that she's talking about. Because it's just like when you're asleep, you're not analyzing your sleep. But in the morning, I can ask you how you slept, and you can tell me. But if let's see, things are going nice. And you turn to somebody and says, wow, this is great, you're not experiencing it anymore. So that's the whole point of rasa, means they're not analyzing it. They're only experiencing it. So in this world, that's the lowest aspect. But in the spiritual world, that'll be the highest, because it's coming from their love for Krishna. Here, we start with the science, simply because then we find out that there's something else other than our desire. Right? And so we have to get used to the concept that there is a supreme and we're not the supreme. Then the next step is that we're a person and God's a person. And sometimes that's the harder one. Yes. You know, and then it's about his desire, that our desire will be fulfilled by fulfilling his desire. That's also a tough one.
Yes.
Like that. You know. In general, it's not so difficult to understand, okay, I'm not the supreme. Because when things don't go right, that's easy to appreciate. But when things are going right, then I don't bother about that one at all. Right? Then you're getting the point is that it's that expression of affection between the living entity and the Lord that is actually the principal item. It's not what's being done. It's not the environment. It's not anything else. Because we'll take it as prema is the main result of chanting. But Bhaktivinoda Thakura makes the point that no, that's a side benefit. The main point is the experience of affection between the Lord and the devotee. That's the real thing. Now, that affection is being expressed by Mother Yashoda through her duties, through the cowherd boys through theirs, the gopis through theirs. So those are actually secondary aspects, how they express it. So if you analyze that too much, you miss the whole point. Love disappears. So that's why at the platform of bhava, gyan disappears. The example is given that when you have fire, firewood, that a fire burns the wood as long as there's wood. When the wood's gone, the fire goes out. So as long as there's material concept, then the Vedic knowledge burns that wood of material concept. But as soon as that concept is gone, then the concept's gone, the fire's gone. So it's not that they don't have knowledge, but it's not about the knowledge, because here it's about knowledge. While there it's about the taste. So they know that you do these certain things, it increases taste, and you do these things, it doesn't. But those are in support. Knowledge is in support. Once knowledge takes a prominence, then naturally the love disappears. Is that okay? So this is something that's being, you know, starting to be introduced here in this third canto, like that. Yes. And the whole idea of how God is a person and our relationship with Him, that exchange within the relationship, that's the important thing, the experience of that. What's done is not. So this whole thing is, oh, well, who am I in the spiritual world, and knowing that, that's my Sarup Siddhi, that actually is not. You know, it's just like the paint job on your car is not the car. But when you look at the car, you see the paint job and the shiny, you know, this and that. That's all you see. But the car is actually something else. You know what I'm saying? You look at it and go, ooh, nice car. But, you know, how it drives, that's when you know if it's a nice car or not. You know? Like that. So that's the whole thing, is that we're used to looking at the external and taking that as the all in all. The secondary for us is everything. Because we've come from looking at devotion to Krishna and looking at his creation and desiring to enjoy the creation. So our focus is only secondary. So material life is secondary. Though within that we can say there's the people involved, and then there's the things you do, you know, or things to be gained. So within secondary there's still also primary, secondary. Just like within primary there's primary and secondary, because the principle always works. You know, within itself, it always works. So that's then that's how it will. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this is it seems to be something that we're not generally used to discussing. If you discuss it in context with something, then devotees can relate to it. But if you discuss it just as a philosophical point, it's not well
received.
Yes.
But with Brahma, with his whole...
Yes, when you do it in relationship here, because here you do it a little bit at a time in relation to each thing.
Yeah.
But as we embarked off onto just discussing it on its own, then you notice there's this certain kind of pleasant dullness in the crowd. Because it's just something we're not used to hearing. Because we're it's not a fault, because we're trained to just actually identify Bhagavan as actually the spiritual platform. And the others we don't, because we're so used to that. You know, it's just like if you want to be, let's say someone has a bad habit. So you want to train them, get rid of the habit, you take them out of that environment of the bad habit until they're properly trained. Then they can be back in the habit. Like say someone who drinks too much, they have to be out of that scene completely, associate with no one who does it, until they become strong. Then they can go to a party where people drink and they don't care. But you can't learn it in that environment. So because karma and jnana for us are so important, that's all we've done since time immemorial. So that means the Brahman platform, the external, all these things is all we look at. Therefore, we only look at the devotional aspect. And that's technically all that's required to go back to Godhead. Right? As long as we focus just on that. Like you see, 60s, 70s, you know, that was the focus. But with the 80s, then came forth the glory of it's okay to be a grihastha. You know, and then you know, from that, then the community, and then what's the being, you know, why being so fanatic, and then, you know, brahmacharis aren't being honest, and then the whole thing is that it goes, and now it's just community, and nobody gets trained, and all this, so the absorption in the direct activities is very minimal. But when they're doing something spiritual, they're only doing direct activities. But the amount that they're doing is in no comparison to, let's say, it's like before, in general. So then, the difficulty comes up is that then if you bring up these other aspects, they can't be appreciated. Because if you're dealing with the Brahman platform, is how is so, okay, no, this is how we got into it, is that previously you don't have to deal with the Brahman and Paramatma platform because everybody's dealing directly with Bhagavan. There is only devotional service. There is only Sampradaya. But as soon as you add in my job, my family, my money, my security, my independence, my free will, then the only thing you're dealing with is the indirect, which is Brahman and Paramatma. So if you don't add that science, you are in Maya. No ifs, no ands, and no buts. So therefore, the Vedic science deals with that because the general group of people are grihasthas who are congregation. That's how the Vedic culture works. And then of that, you have a small group who are, you know, more serious about brahminical activities and then about devotional activities, even smaller than that. So as we expand out into the community, if we don't add the Vedic culture and knowledge to it, then you end up with nothing. But the fun part is through the mode of ignorance, we think, no, as we expand out into this, we need less of it. Right, before, as we, you know, we followed all these Vedic rules, but as the community, we don't have to follow them. No, those rules are for them. If a brahmachari forgets to wash his feet after going to the toilet because he's chanting and doing service, he's still pure. But if a grihastha does it, they're just downright dirty. So that's the whole thing, is these rules are for grihasthas. Brahmacharis, the rules are very simple. Sannyasis, the same. You hardly add anything to. With the brahmachari rules, you add a couple of rules to them, to that. In other words, the brahmachari stays away from it, the sannyasi is indifferent to it. That's basically the difference. You know?
So the farther away you get from the mothership, the more...
The more rules you need. In other words, if Bhagavat means that's all you're doing. Then if you want to expand that, then Prabhupada gives the Pancharatrik, which then includes everybody can... Everybody, no matter what varna ashram, he can be fully engaged. But as you venture out from that, you know, not being fanatic, then if you don't add the Vedic, which is meant to accommodate that, then what do you have? You have, at best, topmost pranamoy, atheistic Western moralism. And that's as good as it gets. All this being equal, you know, everybody equal opportunity. This is pure atheistic mundane. That there's nothing philosophical here. Nothing from the Vedas. You're just dealing with pure materialism. And the people who say it would have been saying it as karmis anyway. It's not that they gained this. It means the guy who would not have said it as a karmi would not say it as a devotee. So it's not that there's something special here. You're just dealing with pure, unalloyed conditioning. But because you use fancy words and that, you try to make it look as though it's spiritual. Because who wants to look like a materialist, right? That's pretty dumb, right? So you want to be on the top of the pile. So therefore, you try to make it look like religion. And according to Niti, then if you're going to... If you want to be... You're on the platform of Niti, or in other words... How do you say ethics, or just mechanically successfully getting done what you want to get done? But you have to deal with a religious person. The way you do it is by quoting religion. That's how you bewilder. Because if you talk niti, they'll say, I'm not doing that. But if you talk religion, okay. So that's what we're dealing with in reality, stark reality.
This is Kali. I mean, Kali is. Fully captured even the religious institutions.
That's
Kali's agents.
And here Kali's agents doesn't mean like we were thinking before that you're, you know, card carrying, flag waving. Yeah. You don't know it. He's just using you.
Expert.
You know, that's all.
Totally expert.
So that's all, is that without knowing, then that comes up. So that's what's being pointed out here, is that Brahma has to create all this. And he doesn't want to become bewildered by this. So Krishna's saying, this is how I'm everything, so you can see. But at the same time, as you know, I'm a person beyond this. That's the secret. Is to be able to see him in everything, and at the same time know he's beyond. Because if you say he's in everything, that's impersonalism. Like that. And then, it's impersonalism. It is impersonalism. But it's real impersonalism. It's the Brahmavat. But... It's still separate from Krishna's Bhagavan, but still, otherwise, what is this made of? then you're saying it's not made of Krishna. Then who's it made out of? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Is then that's what world religions have been deliberating now for thousands of years that they can't work out. You know, because they have to deal with the reality, but at the same time, it's just the ideal, and they can't do it because they can't balance this. So for us, it's not a problem. So you only deal with it when you have to. Right? If you can see a direct devotional application to the water cooler at the office, go for it. If you can't, start with Brahman and work up from there.
Yeah, except for meat eating, I learned all of the other activities right in the church. Also in the synagogue, too. My first taste of alcohol was my friend's bar mitzvah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it's good stuff.
Champagne.
Oh, I see. Not in the. Okay. I see, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yes. It wasn't during the ritual.
Expert. I mean, Kali is just.
No, Kali is very expert. Like that. I was reading something where in the monasteries, I don't know if it's now, but before, there was the thing is that there was a certain amount of wine that every monk could get per day. They had a quota, you know, it's a higher grade than grog, like on the ships. But but if you didn't take it, it was considered pious, a pious credit. You'd get more credit if you took it. It wasn't bad. But if you didn't take it, then that was considered like, you know, they're a saint.
But it wasn't communion wine.
No. This was just they had a quota during the day. Because you have to remember, these are the guys that made it. You know, that's the thing. What do you do all day? You know, you don't have philosophy. What do you do all day? Right? You know, so they make wine. In Finland, the biggest wine production is by a... what do you call it? East Orthodox, the biggest East Orthodox church in Finland. Like that, they have, you know, it's considered the biggest company and the best. So if you want to get, you know, except for imported, but if you want to get the best, you get that. So that's how they maintain themselves. They make something like, forget what it is, 12 million euros a year off of it or something, and then they can run their place. Because before they had 400 monks. So they didn't have to do that kind of stuff. Now they have 12. You know, no one's becoming a monk anymore. So, you know,
can't beat them, join them.
Yeah. Yes.
Recently, we heard that the Pope has said that God is not a magician, and he has accepted the Big Bang Theory. This last weekend.
Oh, okay. Just last week. Okay. Yeah. Problem is who started the bang?
We should invite the Pope to the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. Maybe he'll be inspired to accept that also.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, throw him in, right? It's probably said the President of America and the Queen of England for the opening, so throw in the Pope, right? Okay. Does this make any sense? So in other words, Krishna's pointing out how Brahma can see Krishna everywhere, but because he's able to see him everywhere, at the same time seeing him as a person, and therefore perform his duties in devotion to the person, that is by Krishna's mercy. And that's Krishna's astonishing skill. Right? That's his mystic power, is that through performing things that you can see both of these seeming contradictory elements at once. Right? So the karmi can't see Brahman, the Brahman can't see karma. Here you can see both at once. Because you understand they're both Krishna. Right? Then you can see the person. So then this way he can go beyond.
You can't see that unless Krishna is pleased.
Yes, that's also we see is constantly coming up again and again. The acharyas are pointing out, only if Krishna is pleased can you know him, can you have the knowledge, can you have bhakti. There's no endeavor you could. So your endeavor is simply to prove that that's you're sincere about it. That's all. It's not that the endeavor itself gains the bhakti. The endeavor is what pleases the Lord. So therefore, Krishna says, do these endeavors. These are the recommended endeavors. Therefore, the Vedic, the Pancharatrik, the Bhagavad activities. By performing those, that's what pleases him. And then you come to the planet. And so then, and those are the and the fun part is those are the same activities that continue in the spiritual world. But here we do them, the secondary activities, as the primary. But in the spiritual world, the secondary activities are secondary, and the primary is the bhakti.
Brahma, Pranam, Brahma, Havya, Brahma, No, Brahma, Havya. In that 424 verse, it's all Brahma.
Yes.
What is it? A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. I forget how it goes now, you know. Anyway, the means and the ends are the same. The consummation is absolute, and that which is offered is the same spiritual nature.
Yes. So it's all that, but at the same time, is why is it being done? Is because of the devotion.
Yeah.
But the ritual itself has that Brahman aspect. Because everything is about Krishna. But at the same time, is who's the Brahman coming from? Krishna. So therefore, there's no difference. If Krishna's energy is not different, Krishna the Brahman is not different. But we don't, that's why Prabhupada uses the term exclusive monism. Because if you exclusively stick to that, that's a problem. But if you see this monistic aspect, and that's Krishna's, then there's no problem. So we don't focus on it, we just know it's there. But at the same time, so we don't understand that it's not a problem as long as we understand Bhagavan. Because as we said, because we're so conditioned to karma and jnana, that by being separated from the understanding of Brahman and Paramatma, then it's not a big problem. Because otherwise we will come up with some mundane interpretation. You know? Well, if it's all one, it doesn't matter what I do, right? That's the next thing. No, it does matter what you do, because it doesn't matter what you do, but then how are you going to please Krishna? Because Krishna is the one that said, do this. But it's not about this, it's about pleasing Krishna. So there's no such thing as it doesn't matter what I do. Right? So you can't make up your own system, because it won't work. So the only reason karma works is because it's Krishna. Because you perform the activity, you perform the Agnihotra, or you perform the Ashwamedha, or whatever it is you perform, then because that is what's recommended by Krishna, then that result that you're looking for, you get. But it's not that the ritual itself generated it. It's that Krishna being pleased generated it. But because the emphasis is not on bhakti for that person, therefore it's called karma kanda. But the devotee performs the same thing. It's bhakti. Yudhishthira Maharaj performed Ashwamedha, he performed Rajasuya. Rajasuya much bigger than Ashwamedha. So then, but he's only doing that in pure devotion. Because what happens? Now, if you do a Rajasuya sacrifice, or even an Ashwamedha, now, you don't just sit down with your little priest and, you know, quietly do it. You have to invite all the kings, you know, and all the sages, all, you know, whoever you can, you know, whatever, however big your networking is, right? You know, to do it, you have to have already gotten all the kings to agree and accept that you are the emperor. Then, in doing that, you're going to have to pick who's the senior most there and worship them. So now we can see, underlying, what's the excuse for Rajasuya? You get to invite Krishna and worship him in front of everybody. Like that. That's why Yudhishthira Maharaj is doing it. But it also fulfills his duties as a king, and he's performing kingly duties to please Krishna, because Krishna has come as a king and wants to interact like that, so therefore then it works. So that's underlying what it is. But because we only see external in the beginning, therefore that's what's shown. We talk about the internal, and we understand that there is an internal. But our focus still tends to remain on the external. But we slowly, slowly, as the Bhagavatam goes through, it switches it to the internal. Otherwise, when we get the 10th canto, we'll also see it as external. And that's the idea, is when you get the 10th canto, you shouldn't be looking at it from the external point of view. You should be looking at it from the exchange of love between Krishna and his devotees. That's what the 9 cantos are doing. So already in 3rd canto, you know, our understanding is being challenged.
Yes.
And this is after we got through the 2nd canto that most devotees try to avoid. So it's not any more technical knowledge, but because you're adding the personal element to this technical knowledge. That's where it becomes difficult, because, okay, there's the person, and then there's this technical stuff. But how the person and the technical stuff go together, you have to be able to simultaneously Krishna and his energies, and at the same time as Krishna is separate from his, you know, as a person. So that then the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva element becomes more, how you say, comes more to the forefront. So it comes.
We tend to be external, secondary, we don't trust Krishna. But the more we hear about him,
yes,
the more we trust him.
Yes.
We attract it.
Yes.
Yeah.
As Bhurijan ports out, because it's Poshanam. See, it's Sthanam, he's maintaining the creation, but Poshanam, he's nourishing. And he nourishes devotees. Like that. So he says one of the first things that Krishna does in the first canto is bring out this principle of Poshanam. Because, I mean, you first open with the sages, and then, you know, their points about the incarnations and this, and then why was it written? So then you have the whole story with Narad Muni and Narad Muni. And then when you get into, okay, well, how did they meet, and how is this brought up as a discussion, then the first story is Uttara. And it doesn't start back with, you know, the Pandavas are there, and then Ashutama went, and then he sent the Brahmastra. It starts right in the middle with Uttara running up to Krishna and saying, protect me. So Bhurijan Prabhu points out that Poshanam is the first thing, because if we're going to surrender, the first thing is why?
Yeah.
You know, I've been taking care of myself all this time. Okay, I'm not doing a good job, but at least, you know, yeah, you know, I can trust myself. So then you have to be able to trust Krishna. So then here, you know, it's like, how many of us can say that we have had this experience, or know anybody who's had this experience, that they've had a localized, miniature, personalized nuclear weapon go off inside your body? Right? No. Okay. You like that? Never had that personal. Always the more generic kind of, like Hiroshima was for everybody, so it was more, you know, accommodating for that. You know, this was very exclusive. You know, so it wasn't. Yeah. So then, you know, you can't say I got more troubles than Uttara. Yeah. No one can say that. So then, if he's saving her and saving Parikit,
yeah,
then surely he can take care of us.
That was her motive, to save Parikit.
Yeah. Here, the knowers of the truth perform these pious acts to please me. They desire to please me. They do not desire to make me the object of their pleasure. Right? They want to please Krishna because they want a result, but they're not trying to make him the result of their pleasure. Right? Means, in other words, it's the end goal of their activity is not to please Krishna. As a person, they're trying to please him so that they get what they want. Right? So that's the difficulty. I am pleased with such persons who perform bhakti with sattva guna. Right? So, therefore, even just that basic, that they're performing in sattva guna, because that's recommended. Because if someone situates themselves that way, then people will progress. So if people situated like this get facility, then people are inspired to do this. Because from this platform in goodness, right, they're going to get association of saintly persons. That's just how the mode of goodness works. You're supposed to do things associated with saintly people, do auspicious activities, mm-hmm, right? Hear from the Vedic literatures, attend festivals. So all this, then you may come in contact with a devotee. So bhakti is the underlying principle that is functioning in there, and then because it's underlying, you may come in contact with actual direct bhakti. Does that make sense? Just like karma. I mean, gyan, it's the same. You're supposed to associate with saintly persons. Therefore, we see that the sannyasis in Varanasi invited Lord Chaitanya to come and, you know, spend some time with them. So by that, they got the Lord's mercy. So that's the underlying principle, that bhakti is the underlying principle in karma and gyan. Though, but only really when you follow it in the mode of goodness do you actually get the opportunity to come in contact with bhakti directly. Otherwise, if you're in the other, you know, you don't know you're following, or you're in modes of passion and ignorance, it's a tendency you won't. Shaivites don't always invite devotees to their house. Right? If they're very staunch, they won't. If they're not, then, you know, they may. You understand? So therefore, mode of goodness, that means they'll be worshipping Vishnu, then there'll be some benefit. So at the same time, we can see is underlying is a natural position for the devotee to function from. Because if that's just the basis, then it's a natural position to worship the Lord from. But the difference is you'll be trying to make Krishna the object of their pleasure. That'll be the difference. So that's why the mode of goodness is recommended. Because it brings one, it is uplifting, so there's more chance you come in contact with Krishna consciousness. I am the super soul of every individual. I am the supreme director and the dearest. People are wrongly attached to the gross and subtle bodies, but they should be attached to me only. 42. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport. In the present verse, stress is given to focusing love upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word koryat is significant here. This means one must have it. It is just to stress that we must have more and more attachment to the principle of love. The influence of Maya is experienced by the part and parcel spiritual entity, but it cannot influence the supersoul, the Paramatma. The Mayavadi philosophers, accepting the influence of Maya on the living entity, want to become one with the Paramatma. But because they have no actual love for Paramatma, they remain ever entrapped by the influence of Maya and are unable to approach the vicinity of Paramatma. This inability is due to the lack of affection for the Paramatma. A rich miser does not know how to utilize his wealth, and therefore, in spite of his being very rich, his miserly behavior keeps him everlastingly a poor man. On the other hand, a person who knows how to utilize wealth can quickly become a rich man, even with a small credit balance. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Though natural affection for Paramatma exists, because of lack of experience of Paramatma, the jiva does not have affection for Paramatma. Right, so it's natural to have that affection, but we don't just due to lack of experience. We don't know, you know, the principle, we don't know how to function in that. He is like a wealthy merchant who does not know that he possesses wealth and thus acts like a poor man. Thus it is enjoined that the jiva should have affection. It is an injunction. Right? You should have affection. So it's only because we should have, therefore we take it seriously. Otherwise, what's the big deal? However, though Paramatma is dearest, it is seen that even though the jnanis may realize him directly, there is no rati for Paramatma and prema does not develop. Right? So even if they realize him as the supreme, there's no attraction. Right? Because they're just thinking him as the supreme. That's all. It's not a matter of a relationship, because rati means relationship. There's attraction. So because of that, then there's no rati. And if there's no rati, there's no prema. Right? Because there first has to be rati to develop prema. For the devotees alone, Paramatma is existing in all time and space is the dearest. Right? Because he's everywhere, so you can see Krishna everywhere. So that's the next thing. That's, why is it all this? Because Paramatma is everywhere. Right? What I'm going to technically do, that's according to the Brahman aspect. But what's done? Why I'm that's Paramatma, because he's there. And who's Paramatma? It's Krishna's expansion. Right? So. For the devotees alone, Paramatma existing in all time and space is the dearest. This is not so for the jnanis. Though the sun dispels the pain of cold and gives happiness to the eye with light, and though this is experienced by all, some people do not appreciate this. This is because they have no attachment for the sun. And though the sun gives happiness to them, it is also indifferent to them. Right? So even though they may get the benefit, the sun is indifferent. They're indifferent to him, he's indifferent to them. Yeah. Does that make sense? Because he reciprocates how you do. Yeah. It's not that he's not providing the opportunity. His indifference doesn't mean he does nothing. It's just that he only does according to how you work. He equally gives the same opportunity to everybody. Right? That's the equalness. Yes.
So if Paramatma represents Pradyumna and he's the power of attraction, then why living entity is not attractive? Why he's not?
Because Paramatma is Aniruddha.
Oh, Aniruddha.
Yes. Why we're attracted by the aspects of the universal form, that's Pradyumna. Right? So the creation becomes attractive because Garbhodakshaya Vishnu has expanded. Right? So therefore, we're attracted to everything. But then he enters into everything as Paramatma. So that's the goal. In other words, everything that we're dealing with, the goal should be the Lord. No, so we're attracted to it. That's Pradyumna. But so what do you do with attraction? There should be a goal. That should be the Lord. So for the devotee, he may start from that Brahman platform, and he's attracted, but then it's to please Krishna. So it always comes back. So therefore, the activity is done to please Krishna, so Vasudeva. And how do you do that? With proper understanding, Sankarsha. So with the proper understanding, I apply my attraction to please the Lord, and therefore I perform my activity in that mentality. So then all four come into play. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. The jnanis do not rejoice in the Brahman, though it gives happiness of realizing the self and destroys ignorance, because they do not have great attachment to it. Right? So they talk about Brahmananda, but they won't actually have it because they don't have any affection for Brahman. Right? Because unless you have affection for Brahman, how are you going to get happiness from that? So the Brahman is how you say, giving the happiness of realization of the self and destroying ignorance. But it doesn't actually, they don't get any, there isn't, that Brahmananda they talk about, they're not actually going to taste, because that means there has to be some affection for Brahman. So they actually don't get that. Right? Yes.
So then the jiva is Satchitananda, this is the nature. So where is the affection? Towards whom? Themselves or what?
Meaning
the Maya bodies? They attract it?
Yeah, basically. They would have to come back, basically back to themselves. Yeah. Because otherwise,
like
what?
Somebody.
Yeah, so it would have to be themselves. Because they think they're God. So that, you think you're God, it generally is a sign you like yourself. You know? If you thought you were an idiot, you wouldn't say, I'm God.
Everything is I.
This nice, how you say, aluminum baseball bat swinging at a very high velocity towards your head is also you. And in a short moment, they will both be one. Yeah, devotees used to have a lot of fun with the mind and body, especially in the book distribution. It's all one, then it's your wallet, it's my wallet, it's all our wallets, so they give me your wallet. Yes, like this. You know. And they couldn't say no, you know, if they were really, you know, done that. Either they had to surrender and buy a book, or they had to stick to it, and then you take their money, and then you give them the book. So it worked out.
Panga Jangri told me that there's a story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati with a couple of his disciples on a train, and there's a Mayavadi And so he has a box of mangoes, and in the box is a really bad mango. So he tells the disciple, go give that mango to the Mayavadi. don't know, the story ends there.
You don't need to go beyond it. Give that to the Mayavadi. Does that make sense? So in other words, realization below Bhagavan is not actually of great value, because the soul by nature is spiritual and is a devotee of the Lord. So anything below Bhagavan realization doesn't have much value. That's why we don't put much credence in those below that. But if there's a sincere attempt to follow these paths, trying to actually find the absolute truth, then such a sincere person, because of the interest, will progress. You know, so Krishna's making that point. But those who are dogmatic, that there is no form, there is nothing, this and that, they're not actually spiritual. They're not going to get anywhere. That's why then we can, you know, these kind of fun is there. Give the bad mango to the Mayavadi. Like that. How you say? Under that should be a caption that says, "Do not try this at home."
Yeah, that could be a good idea.
Yeah. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta, if you can pull it off, great. But otherwise, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is, you know. In other words, if the Mayavadi got upset, if he really wanted to go for it, then he could talk in Sanskrit and just trounce him seriously. Yeah. Plus, he's a sannyasi, so, you know, from all sides, the Mayavadi is not going to win.
Yeah.
Because they do not have great attachment to it, Brahman also giving them realization of the impersonal aspect is indifferent to them. Right? So you see, for the karmis and the jnanis, that they don't have that affection for the Lord. And the Lord, therefore, does not reciprocate that affection. Though he gives them the benefit of the proper performance of their work. Because at least a karmi does good work. A jnani does proper work. But the thing is it's in one sense wasted, because it doesn't give any real benefit to the soul. Is that? When the devotee of the sun god, whether having vision or blind, sees the sun, who is satisfied by his devotion, as having hands and feet along with chariot and horses, he brings the sun under his control by his devotion. Right? So we see here is that, you understand what's happening here? Because the Lord is the sun. And so therefore, seeing that the deity of the sun in this way, then by having that devotion, he brings the Lord in that form under his control. But he doesn't bring Bhagavan under his control. Does that mean this?
What's the difference?
Hmm?
In what sense it's not Bhagavan, it's not Krishna?
It means it's Krishna, because that's why there's that attractiveness. But at the same time, it's not Krishna. Because it's Krishna, therefore you can say it's bhakti. But because it's not Krishna's Bhagavan, it's not bhakti. You understand? Therefore we call them karmis and jnanis. Does that make sense? See, trying to bring out is the concept is there is only Krishna and his creation. Right? And then the jivas, you know, for our context of perspective. So there isn't anything else. So the natural position of the living entity is devotion to the Lord. But because we may not see the Lord personally, therefore what we will see will be the Lord, but not in the personal aspect. So therefore Brahman and Paramatma. And so we will see that. Because how will we see anything else? If that dead matter doesn't have spirit in it, why would we notice it? You know what I'm saying? It's like if you're really hungry, if I take you through the garage, do you find anything interesting? No. Like that. You know, you don't think, that looks like a nice wrench.
Even if
that's
in public.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, you understand? So what has value to the living entity, that's what will be seen. So dead matter will have no value. So all that you're perceiving in this world is Krishna's potency. Right? How he empowers it. So he makes it attractive. He makes it of value. Therefore, we're attracted to things. We have those things as a goal in life. That's because it's Krishna. But it's only through his expansion. It's not him directly.
So it's indirect worship. But
it's indirect worship. It's better than no worship. But here we're also saying is, even we're taking... Now, yes, let's take it step by step. Means worship of Bhagavan, that's of value, and anything else is not. Next stage down is... You're worshipping according to the Vedic, you're worshipping Brahman Paramatma, you're not, in other words, it's not direct worship of the Lord, it's indirect worship of the Lord, but it's authorized. So then that's next recommended. That's the people in this mode of goodness that Krishna's talking about. Right? Then you have that those who are basically worshipping material energy. Right? Not knowing the Shastra, not knowing Krishna's potencies. They just think the dead matter is the reality and they're worshipping it.
Aborigines?
No, I was talking about the civilized people at this point. Aborigines, we haven't gotten to yet. Their worship means, what are they worshipping? It means they like their city, they like their car, they like their phone, they like their clothes.
That's what they
It's just like, what makes the person?
The clothes.
Yeah, the clothes. It's that joke. You know, it's the clothes make the man, right? It's supposed to be the man makes the clothes, but the clothes make the man, right? So that's the whole thing. Is you have the right clothes, you're driving the right car, everything you're doing right, then that's okay. But if there's anything wrong, it's not going to work. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. So then. They're still worshipping, but on that Brahman level, but with no realization, no understanding. Right? But they're sophisticated. Then you have the unsophisticated who are sitting out in the forest. Right? And then just think that the tree, or this, or that, is...
Mara?
Yes.
Where is the distinction between Shaktiman worship and Shakti worship in these categories?
Shakti, you think Shakti is the source of everything. So still, there's devotion to Shakti, and it was just part of the Lord. So if you perform devotion to Shakti according to the scriptures, then you'll get your result. But at the same time, as you get your result, that there's an indifference, because you don't really care about the Shakti, you don't care about the Shaktiman. So they worship Durga with great affection, but technically it's not about her. So therefore, they get what they want. She gives them what they want, but she's indifferent to them.
So this is like the third category you mentioned.
This is you could say a subsection within the second, because we're talking about the Vedic.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, if people are worshiping nature and all that, that's within what I talk the third, because they don't know the Vedic. So in other words, those who know the Vedic. That's better than those who don't. Yeah. But within the Vedic, those who know Vishnu, that's better.
Yes.
That's what you want to come to. That's where reality begins.
We don't know Bhagavan. We can't know Bhagavan. So how?
No, but the acharyas know Bhagavan.
So we just worship according to them.
That we worship how they say, and so because we are following them and have faith in what they say, that's why we develop that.
Yes.
You understand? Yeah, so that's why this idea we'll make up our own, or we don't have to follow these things, that's not important. It's like this. There are unlimited people saying unlimited speculation. So one more speculation, who cares? So that's the whole thing, is it doesn't matter. Unless it's based on Guru Sadhu and Shastra, it just really doesn't matter.
Yes.
Is that so?
To have affection for the Lord.
Have affection.
Means it is a sign of getting mercy.
Yes, if that affection is there, it's a sign of getting mercy. But that will mean that that affection is to please the Lord rather than just to show off you have affection or to experience the happiness of having affection.
Yes.
Like that. Does that make sense? That's why we see is the taste for the holy name is a beginning stage. Because why are we inspired? Because there's a taste. There's no taste, less inspired. Right? In other words, we get a taste because we're steady. Right? And we're steady because this is what gives results. Right? This is what we're supposed to do. So, ultimately, it's to please Krishna. But it's not specifically that that's what it is. It's ultimately to please Krishna. You understand? But by that position, you get a taste. Then it becomes dynamic. Then from that taste, you become attachment. From that, then there becomes ecstasy. But then at some point, it's got to be about Krishna himself, not just the experience you gain from himself. You understand? It means Mother Jashoda loves Krishna not because she's happy doing that, or it generates ecstasies, because she just loves Krishna. You understand? So we're still going up through these things, but now we're getting dynamic. When you get a taste, then you're actually experiencing the spiritual platform. Right? In a dynamic way. Anything before that, you eat the halva, you like it, that's the spiritual platform. You know, and therefore you're back next time, right? Because there's more halva, right? So
bring the bucket.
Put it in the bucket. Bring your own bucket. Can I have a bucket? No, we're all busy. I brought my own. But what about middle off the top of each?
So we can say. We can say only Braja Bhakti, we can call it unconditional. Because everything else below that, it has some.
Bingo. That's why we make the term pure unalloyed. But when we're discussing amongst ourselves, when the acharyas are addressing just the devotional process of the devotees, they only talk about pure devotion. But when they're talking about what is practiced within the spiritual realm, then they distinguish it as pure unalloyed devotion. Because the other things, that it is devotion, means in Vaikuntha, they have prema. Like that. And sometimes in some things it goes beyond sneha and this and that. But there's also the aspect of that they're enjoying the bliss of Vaikuntha. But in Braja, it's not about the bliss of Vaikuntha. So when they're, it's not about, wow, see how great, you know, Vaikuntha is, it looks so beautiful and all that, and isn't this wonderful. Here, it's you're appreciating that because that's the service they're rendering to Krishna. See how nice the trees are, they're giving nice shade for Krishna and Balaram and beautiful flowers and all these different things. So you see, they notice the Dham, they glorify, but it's because of the service rendered to Krishna. Right? The other is just the greatness of the Lord. You know, he's God and he has such a wonderful place. You know, so he's like a spiritual Disney. But because it's connected to the Lord, it's perfect. That's why we say that that Vaikuntha is perfect. Mathura is more perfect, but Vrindavan is most perfect. So it is perfect, so therefore there's nothing to complain about. But one can go farther. So that's what we see in Briya Bhagavatamrita. It deals with that. It just shows the relationship between these kinds of affection and the realms themselves. But it's all perfect. You know, that's why there's no fault to be found. It's just there's more perfect. That's the thing. It's not that one's wrong. It's just the other thing is more right. So Vaikuntha is not wrong. It's just Mathura is more right than that. And Vrindavan is more than that. Is that Similarly, the jiva, whether liberated or in bondage, delights in the Paramatma with realization of his qualities and brings Paramatma under his control by his devotion. Right? So as soon as you introduce the personal element, that's where it works. So even here, you're worshipping the sun god. Right? If you're just worshipping the sun, okay, nice. You accepted a power of the Lord. But when you worship the sun god, then that's better. Because you don't bring the sun under control until you bring in the personal. Right? So the supreme is there, but when you bring in the personal as Paramatma, then there's control. Right?
Yes.
But otherwise, on the Brahman platform, it's neutral. But it's still working because of pleasing the Lord.
Yes.
So that personal aspect has to be there. Otherwise, the devotion doesn't really have any meaning. Right? You can't really be devotional towards something impersonal.
Yes.
You know, how am I devotional towards, you know, greatness? You know, I respect greatness in this, but how? What's the reciprocation?
It has to be specific.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. Because ultimately, we're specific and God's specific. That's the whole point. That's why underlying, that's always the principle that has to be brought out. It always leads in that way. Okay, it's just like this. Let's say there's someone who's a materialist, he's a demigod worshiper. But if I say, okay, you're just worshiping, but it has to be about the person, about the demigod, right? Then I will take it up. Why? Because I'm materialistic and I want the results. Okay? Mm-hmm. But now I'm used to the principle that the personal is more important than the impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Even though I may say, well, they're all one and they're all part of the Supreme, but still the personal worship is more important. Okay? So, we're going to get a little more benefit than if we don't. But where's the real benefit to be applied? If that person now comes in contact with devotees and hears about Krishna, then what's going to be his tendency? Worship the person.
Yes.
Right? You understand? So that's the whole thing, is everything is done so that if you put it into the proper place, it has effect. Right? The martial artist is sitting there waving his arms around in the air. Why? Because if it somehow or another somebody's head comes within the proximity of his hands, then there'll be an effect. Right? So that's the whole point, is that all these things about personal, devotional, relationships, etiquette, appreciation, all these things, is because that's what they do in the spiritual realm. That's why then, at least if you're not going to do it in connection with devotion, at least just do it as a general principle. Because then you're open to, if you do come in contact, then it'll be easy for you. Right? If I know how to cook, then when I hear about cooking for Krishna, it's very easy to cook for Krishna. But if I don't know how to cook and then I hear about cooking for Krishna, then we had a problem here. Right? Yeah. So, therefore the Vedic culture. You know what I'm saying? And so it's useless to reverse logic then, you know, no, but Krishna will come in pants. You know? There's a good chance he's not going to. We haven't heard the Acharyas talk about it. There's no stories about it. No literatures about it. It's like, you know, you're talking about an unlimited long shot here. You know, so therefore, you don't do that. Put yourself means you know what they do in the spiritual world. Do that, right? Here, just to give us just a slight hint. Now, Krishna in Vrindavan is known as what varna?
Vaishya.
Okay, and in Dwarka, he's known as what ashram?
Yes.
Now, would that, just let, now, well, we're really stretching the, you know, we're really stretching it here. But would that possibly indicate that in the spiritual world, they might practice varna ashram?
I don't know.
You understand? But is Yudhishthira worried about varna ashram? No, are the Brajvasis worried about it?
No.
Let them be. Oh no, Shishupal. Krishna is
not, he doesn't belong to any object.
Yes. No, he was worried about it. But it was just his glorification that he's beyond. Yes. So does that make sense? So therefore, that lifestyle is recommended. So all we're doing is being asked to do what the professionals do. You know what I'm saying? If we say, okay, this is what the professionals do, then we want to do that.
Yeah.
Yes. You know?
Yeah.
Yes. Like that, even though we can't do it, right? You have this shoe that they spent so many millions of dollars to develop, so one guy can use it and win a gold medal.
Yes.
Right? So when we put it on, any gold medals happening? Good chance, no. You know, it just looks good when we sit down on the couch and put one foot upon the other, and then people can see, oh, you had the, you know, like that. Right?
Yes.
You know, or when you walk down the street, the punks go, hey, he's got those shoes, and then when you go around the corner, they relieve you of the shoes. So various applications of the value of these shoes. But as far as actually running, who actually, out of the millions of shoes, you know, that are sold, actually use it to do some serious running, right? Jogging is not called serious. You know, like that. Maybe valuable, but we're just talking about, you could also wear your, you know, Converse, you know, sneakers, yes, and get the same effect. Does that make sense?
Yeah. All about identity.
Yeah. You probably even jog in your Crocs, right?
Yeah.
You know, so my point is we want to do what the professionals do. Everybody wants what the professionals do, right? So therefore, if we're given what the professionals in the spiritual world do, right, means that Sridham, now as a living, he is an associate of Krishna, right? You'd have to admit he's a professional. Right, when it comes to what Cowherd Boys do, he's top of the line. Right? So now what they do is what we're asked to do. Not that we do imitate them. We follow in the footsteps. We follow what pleases Krishna. And according to Varnashram, you do what you're supposed to do. The Cowherd Boys don't decide, hey, I want to go hang out with Krishna at midnight. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's 31st October. Hey, let's go hang out with Krishna at night. No. That's where the gopis are.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right? So, that means then you should be doing what you're supposed to be doing. Not, I want to do this, I want to do that. No, you have your duties. So this idea, why am I restricted by duties? No, that's just the way everybody works. The professionals work like that.
So if you're not restricted by duties, you will be restricted by the reactions
of not doing your duties. Yeah, it means you're going to be restricted. It's just whether it's voluntary and it's nice, or it's not voluntary and not nice. Like that. You know, it's like you know, you're free to walk around in your prison cell.
Yes.
You know, you want to sit on the bunk, you want to get up, you want to walk over to the sink, you want to walk back to your bunk, you want to sit down. You know, you're free. Yeah. Hey. Of course, whether the guy on the upper bunk doesn't likes that or not, or that's another thing.
That guy.
Yeah. But I think generally that guy takes the lower bunk. You'd be on the upper bunk, right? Yeah.
I haven't been so.
I mean, because you'd have to get off. The other one, you just sit down. The other one, you have to climb up and then climb down. So generally the guy that you want to make happy is sitting on the bottom bunk. Okay. Thus, Paramatma is most dear to the devotees, whether they have pure bhakti or mixed bhakti. Right? Because they're all worried about the Lord. However, Paramatma is not most dear to the jnanis with a small amount of bhakti. Right? Because that's the point, is their bhakti is temporary. Thus, when the Paramatma itself says, one should show affection for me, it should be considered in relation to the devotee only. So this is where you make the distinction. It's a matter of the affection. So everybody in the universe is performing bhakti to get any success, but it's a matter of whether that bhakti is done with devotion, affection, or not.
Yeah.
Devotion is there, but whether that devotion is with affection. That's what makes the distinction.
means or an end.
Yes. So therefore, that's why the point is rati. So for the devotees, rati is extended down. But what the non-devotees are dealing with is a reflection of that. Right? There's an attraction, an attachment. But it's not actually to the Lord. Well, for the devotee, it's to the Lord. Now, whether they're advanced enough that it's on the platform of prema, that's another thing. But still, they bring the Lord under their control. You know, to that degree that you have that attachment, to that degree is under control. Yes?
Affection can be expressed at any level of...
Yes, it's at any level, but it's just a matter of how much. Like, yeah. One standing in front of the deities offering prayers, affection is there. Yeah. You know, but then, you know, while you're there, and then, you know, some kid comes running up and bumps into you and this and that, and hey, you know, like that, and then, you know, the affection kind of disappears momentarily,
yes.
You know, like that. And then after this and that, then, you know, you see something else, and then, you know, you may kind of lose it there.
Like preaching is a sign of affection.
Yes, because you're doing it because it pleases Krishna. Means you're doing it because then you'll come back and, you know, everything will go into slow motion as everyone claps and stands up and, you know, cheers and that. Then it has its weakness there. But those who, you know, can continue that, it's going to be because of devotion. So that affection is the difference between the two. So like what we were discussing earlier, it's that affection is what makes the distinction between devotees and non-devotees. Right? But still, the principle of bhakti is what makes everything work, because it's Krishna's law. So, mm-hmm. Right? But they just temporarily use it, that's all. And most of the time, most people don't even know that that's what they're doing. Right? Yes?
I'm sorry, but I have to ask what is the difference then with... Because if I hear the word devotion, then I think, of course, there must be some affection.
Yeah, but the point is devotion means that you're applying yourself very nicely with focus to whatever is happening. Just like you say, the student has devotion to his studies.
Yes.
You know, or the man has devotion to his work or his skill. Right? He's a master carpenter because he has devotion to his skill. But it doesn't necessarily mean he has affection. Right? It means it's just like this. You take yourself a person and they're running at a 4-point average. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. Now, because they want to go to medical school. Right? And they're studying very nicely. But as soon as they finish and they got their degree and they finished their specialization, do you see them studying much? No. Because the devotional studies was for a particular goal of becoming a doctor. Now, because of the competitiveness of it, they will be reading journals and doing this and that because they want to keep up on, you know, whatever's the latest thing. So if it comes up, they can mention it so people still think he's not, you know, archaic, right? Or you may find he's a researcher. He's doing that, but why is he doing all that? Because it gets him a grant. So he's actually doing it for the money. If they would give him money anyway, he might not do any research. Right? Or if he's doing the research, it's because of the knowledge. He's going to do it money or not because he's devoted to knowledge. So now whether that benefits anybody or not, that's another thing, because he's not the one that's going to make it available. Somebody else is going to come along and make it available. In a sense. So devotion doesn't necessarily mean affection. Or let's say another thing, that be a little bit more, you know, a tighter circle, okay? Any student with half a brain, 2 weeks before exam, is devoted to their studies. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But now after the exam, then they don't bother until the end of next term. Right?
Yeah.
You know? So 3-month term, that's, you're talking about what, 12 weeks? So for 10 weeks they don't bother, and for 2 weeks they do. Does that make sense? Yes. That's what everybody in the material world is about. Their devotion is to get results. Does that make sense? So even in principle, in the material world, where you're dealing in that environment, it's considered more glorious that someone has cares about people. Right? He's result-oriented, he's successful, but when it comes down to personal things, he pays attention to detail and may make some adjustments that someone else might not make because he wants to consider the individuals. That'll be considered rare. You know, a saint amongst, you know, corporate raiders. You know. Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. One should, thus when the Paramatma himself says one should show affection for me, it should be considered in relation to the devotee only. Or the sentence can mean, for this reason one should show affection for me, the result of which is that the intelligent man will have affection for the body, using the body and senses to perfect body, bhakti. Such persons do not hanker for liberation. So even if it has that mixed element, it's still in connection to pleasing the Lord. Right? They may have affection for the body, using the body and the senses, but for the purpose to perfect bhakti. Right? And at one point, then it's just about the bhakti. And you naturally, to do that, use the body. You don't have to have affection for it to do that. Right? Right? So in other words, you don't take care of the body because you want to, you take care of it because it's useful. Does that make sense? You know, the health freak is going to take care of their body, whether they do anything with their body or not. The main thing they do is you go down to the store, buy healthy things, take it home, prepare them, eat them, so that you have the energy to go back to the store and get more healthy things, so you can go back home and eat them. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? Or you do a healthy thing like go out, you know, jogging or something. But why? So that you increase your health. Like that. But what we're saying is here you are applying that in, you're taking care of it to do devotional service. Right? So you're taking care of the body but engaged in devotional service. So that's perfection. But then there comes a point where you want to do devotional service. So to do that, the body needs to be healthy, so you take care of it. But that's a secondary thing rather than a primary. The Lord concludes, by following my instructions, you can now generate the living entities as before. By dint of your complete Vedic wisdom and the body you have directly received from me, the supreme cause of everything. So now is that by following Krishna's instructions, because the blueprint of the universe is there in the primary creation. And Krishna's instructions, how to view that, how he's everything, but he's not involved in that. He's a person, though he pervades everything. All these different elements. Then, with that, using the body that he has, right, because he'll have to use his mind and intelligence in that, he's going to create everything. Because as we see, everybody's going to come out of some part of his body. Yes. Yes. Like that. Because that potency is there, that makes this particular person. The sage Maitreya says, after instructing Brahma, the creator of the universe, to expand, the primeval Lord, the personality of Godhead, in his personal form as Narayana, disappeared. Right? So now all that's left is the creation. So he's still there. It means that, so that's why he says, why it said in his personal form. Because now in his impersonal form, in Paramatma, he's still there. Yes. But as Bhagavan, he said. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur concludes his commentaries on this chapter as follows. Showing this universe to be created, the Lord disappeared with his form as Narayana. In the first day of Brahma, Brahmakalpa, the Lord recited the four essential Bhagavatam verses, starting with Aham Evasam Evagre, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.32-35. In the Padmakalpa, the last day of the previous half of Brahma's life, the Lord also taught four essential verses in the form of verses 32, 33, 41, and 42 of this chapter. This is the opinion of some. Footnote 17. Verses 32, 33, 41, and 42 read as follows. O Brahma, when you are absorbed in devotional service in the course of your creative activities, You will see me and you and throughout the universe. And you will see that you yourself, the universe and the living entities are all in me. You will see me in all living entities, as well as all over the universe, just as fire is situated in wood. Only in that state of transcendental vision will you be able to be free from all kinds of illusion. It is the opinion of expert transcendentalists that the ultimate goal of performing all traditional good works, penances, sacrifices, charities, mystic activities, trances, etc., is to invoke my satisfaction. I am the supersoul of every individual. I am the supreme director and the dearest. People are wrongly attached to the gross and subtle bodies, but they should be attached to me only. So we see is that it's reiterating the Chaturshloki, but bringing out this practical application of how Krishna is in everything. Because before he said, I am everything, and what is value is me, and I am all that, but I'm beyond that, and so therefore you should look for me. But now he's pointing out how to see that. Yes. Right? So it's the next natural position. Therefore, we get a similar, reaction when we discuss that and we discuss this. So now yes. We know why it had that, you know, kind of. Yes. Okay. Thus ends the commentary on 9th chapter of the 3rd canto of the Bhagavatam for the pleasure of devotees in accordance with the previous acharyas. Right? Wow. So that's how Vishwanath ending, right? Huh? Yeah, so we see as Prabhupada uses this sentence, following in the footsteps of Prabhupada. Very nice. For the pleasure of the devotees in accordance with the previous acharyas. Yes. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jai Gaurakrishna. Okay, so that's why it took taking so much time. This is actually like this when we get to that chapter. I mean, we went through it because we discussed it actually for 4 years, so then it wasn't so. Yes. So then, therefore, it was taking so. Because these last few pages were very slow. That's interesting. I didn't know that they was comparing. That's interesting. That put them together as a study. Even in Brahma Samhita, you have a 56 verse. It's all about Krishna. Then after that, he gets 5 verses or something. They sound similar to Gita, the Sarvadharma, like that kind of thing. Yeah.